This is a Creative Disturbance podcast. I'm Cassini Nazir here with Jeremy Johnson. Jeremy, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm the User Experience and Design Director for Project 202, which is a design kind of technology consulting company here in the Dallas area with offices in Austin and Seattle.
And also with us is Stephanie Brizendine.
Hello. I'm a student at UT Dallas, and I'm majoring in emerging media and communications, hopefully to master's in interaction design soon. I'm also the president of the UX Club.
So let's start this off. Jeremy, what do you think are emerging trends in design, in technology, in wearable technologies, any of the above?
Yeah, at Big Design 2 years ago, I gave a talk on sensors, right? Because I think that was becoming very popular, and the topic was designing for sensors. So how do you design for things that don't have virtual interfaces, right? So I think that has matured a bit. And of course, next Wednesday is the Apple keynote, which, you know, they are building some mysterious building to announce this new whatever. And so I'm definitely curious if they come out with the wearable, you know, since I gave that presentation originally. You know, we've had Android Wear release, and I still find quite often I see Android Wear devices in the wild, right? And with people who are, you know, not, you know, early adopters, right? Which sometimes surprises me. Obviously things like Fitbits, I think people are starting to wonder if those are a fad or not. But I still see people with those every day. So I think it's becoming more common and more acceptable to wear devices that are tracking things or recording things, right, on your person. It might take someone like an Apple, right, to really make that like explode, right? So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with.
And to get that right, what do you think about privacy concerns with regard to, you know, you're giving a tremendous amount of data to people that you don't necessarily know? What are your thoughts on that?
Mostly, I mean, it seems like today people are more okay with sharing things. I think it was actually Fitbit, but early on when one of them launched, it was recording all your activities, and then you could go in and manually put in other activities. So other activities, it was actually sex. So you could actually put sex as an activity. Well, people didn't realize that it was actually sharing every single thing you put in there with the public. And so that was a big uproar because, wow, like I thought this was like a private thing, and then like it's being shared publicly. So yeah, I mean, and that's actually a user experience challenge to make sure that people understand what they're sharing and what they're not. You know, Facebook has spent a lot of time and energy on that recently of trying to really tell people in very plain manner, like, you are sharing this, you're not sharing this, this is who can see this, this is who cannot see that. So yeah, I think people want those controls, but I think people are mostly okay with sharing for various reasons, right?
What do you think's important whenever you're designing something for wearable technologies? What are some design principles that a designer or a organization needs to keep in mind when they're designing wearables? Yeah.
So I also gave a presentation on designing for gestures, like, because there was actually a Kinect hackathon here in Dallas, and we were talking about how you would interact if the interface doesn't exist, right, with just gestures. So wearables are a little different because you can definitely have some kind of, if not a button, at least some kind of touch-enabled screen, or you're either able to shake your arm, or you're able to tap something, or maybe you're able to control something with some other, you know, thing on your person. I mean, I guess the principle is to make it invisible and to make it dead simple, right? I guess would probably be two principles that I'd probably try to follow when making something wearable, right?
I think you're spot on about that. That intuitive, natural are terms that are oftentimes used as well. So there are watches that integrate with our tablets, our phones, our computers as well. What do you think are some strange technologies that may come out of wearables or out of technology that's not in the form factor that we think of as traditional devices?
I mean, the one that I always imagine in my head that will happen at some future point in time, which is good for me as an interface designer, is that when e-paper becomes cheap or free, right? And so when you can have a screen that is so cheap that you can make something disposable out of it, I think that'll be really interesting. So whereas you walk down the grocery aisle and every cereal box is talking to you, and you're able to touch a cereal box and you're able to get the nutritional information out of it, right? And so there's an interaction there, there's animation there, there's like it's a digital screen, right? And so us as creators of digital screens, right, like there's going to be so many of those and they're going to be everywhere. I guess wireless power might be another barrier there. So whenever we figure out batteries, wireless power, and then e-paper, I think that'll be pretty interesting. So
that's a really good example that you're bringing up. I oftentimes we think of sort of the sublime, but as something as mundane, if you will, as a cereal, that the technology will be so entrenched in our cereal aisle. That's quite telling.
I'm actually more curious about smart devices integrated into your home as well as around your life. Yeah. I know there's going to be a lot of development in that area coming. And I know a lot of companies are doing a lot of work, especially like refrigerators. They're doing like, hopefully you can scan the type of food that you put in your refrigerator and your refrigerator will know when you're out of that food or when it's expired. What kind of stuff have you come across that like that in the present day?
So I think that's, so if you could have, so there's all these like low Bluetooth tags and like NFC, and there's rumors that the next iPhone might have NFC, and there are people who say NFC is better, people say the low power Bluetooth is better, but having access to both of those things. So like the milk carton could have an NFC tag on it, right? And then like your fridge can scan it as it goes in and out, and somehow maybe you could tell by duration or weight or something that you're almost out of milk, and then it pings you or goes ahead and orders it from Target because you have your Target app on your phone. You know, I know like Google bought Nest, right? And then they also bought Dropcam, and I had a Dropcam. Actually we have one in the office. Very interesting things come out at night with that Dropcam at the office, by the way. And Dropcam was getting ready to release a tag that you could put on like any object, and then it would tell you when the object left the house or came back to the house. And they canceled it because Google bought them, and now they're trying to decide what to do. So I could only imagine. And then, you know, Samsung also got in that market recently. They bought a company as well. So yeah, I feel like that, yeah, adding digital, I guess the first step is adding something digital to devices that don't have that, and then the next round of devices will probably have that built in, right? So
as we're looking at future technologies and talking about this, I'm reminded of Henry Ford, whose vision was to have everyone have an affordable car, $500 for a car. And this was for farmers. He eventually essentially created the Industrial Revolution in cities, and he really hated this. What might be some ethical implications of the technology that we should look at, and how might we approach that as well as we're designing? So we're not just designing the interface or the interactions, but how might we also give concern to the ethical implications or the externalities as a result of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess power could be one, right? So every device we have consumes power. Like, where are we getting that power from? And then, like, I know when you leave all the devices on your home, they're all kind of trickling power, and people are now coming out with ways to, like, you're shutting off the power at the plug to make sure your devices aren't trickling at night or whatever. And so everything is going to need more power. And so, like, how quickly can we create better solutions for that? Might be one of them. The privacy, even the Nest, like I think I saw a story where they had deconstructed the Nest and there was a microphone in it, right? And there was a microphone in the Nest, right? Well, I mean, from a user experience perspective, like, I would throw that in there, right? Because eventually I wanted to be voice controlled, but then, you know, with everything being connected and seemingly easily hackable, right? Like, so privacy is something that I agree will be big in the future, right?
And,
so.
And also with Nest, someone could essentially take the information that it collects as far as like temperature, like if it's summer, anytime it gets hotter, you know, they're not taking it colder. They're like, okay, they're out of the house. So, I mean, they could track your patterns of when you're leaving your house.
Because there was like on Foursquare, there was a site that would scrape Foursquare, and it was called like Come Rob Me. And like, it would show you people who left the house too. But then, like, I guess on that, like the hacker side, right? Like, once devices become more integrated in our homes, like, people could actually like harm you, right? Like, what if like I could hack your Nest and I could turn the temperature all the way up or down? Like, that could potentially harm you, right? Maybe, or I could deactivate your smoke detector, or I could, you know, who knows what? When every device in your house is, I could turn on your coffee maker, you know, that could start a fire, right?
So I guess I'm hearing that designers really need to think about these edge cases whenever they're designing, and it's not just the interactions and the sort of the possibilities, it's also the sort of negative implications of the technology as well. Let's change the topic a little bit. Can you name a person who's had tremendous impact on you as a leader, as a design thinker, as you design anything? Can you name a few people or one person in general?
Also a good question. I always feel like my mentor, so one of my first bosses, Steven Anderson, who's still in the Dallas area and actually just got promoted to be CXO of a kind of a startup company, which is cool because not a ton of people have that title. I think working for him, you know, changed my life, really set my direction. I think probably early on, some friends that kind of pointed me to say, hey, you know, technology and design can kind of work together. And I think when I was at the beginning, I kind of thought I was going to go into more of an IT role. And then when I kind of found out that you can kind of create, you know, visually, and I had always enjoyed art before that. The kind of people who kind of help me make sure those two things kind of fit together. But I don't know that there's any particular person There's a anthropologist named Jan Chipchase for Nokia that does some really cool work, and like that's always been kind of like inspiring, where he goes out and like will live with people in like a village somewhere and like learn what their needs are in technology or whatever, right? Like that's really cool. And but yeah, I mean, there's a number of great designers out there, and you know, I have a RSS feed, and I bring them all in, and I watch, you know, what's going on. So
Jan Chipchase is a great example. Is he still at Nokia, or
he went to Frog Design for a while, and then he said Frog Design was too corporate for him, and then he left, and I actually don't know what he's doing right now. So
great example of applied ethnography, yeah. And just going out there and learning directly from, yeah, users, and a tremendous amount of courage really to go to some of the parts of the world, yeah, that he's gone to.
So, Jeremy, as an organization gets larger, there can be a tendency for the institution to dampen the inspiration. How do you keep this from happening?
So I actually talk about that in my talk tomorrow. So the example that I give is, yeah, I've worked at a lot of large organizations that have this institutional knowledge, right? There's a story which will take more than a minute maybe, but there's a story called the Eight Monkeys. Have you heard of that? Maybe I won't tell that story. Sorry. So I think going back. So once all that institutional knowledge is gained, usually that's the point in the organization where they start to stop listening to the users because they think they know all the answers, right? So I think forcing them to go back to whoever's using that product, right, I think is actually a way to kind of break through some of that. So
having the people who are actually designing the things always in contact with the end users.
Yeah, a lot of organizations, I mean, when you think about where they start, like, I'm going to solve a problem, like with technology, I'm going to automate something. So you start solving that problem, and then you work directly with the end user and the customer, and then eventually you get big enough and you grow and you hire more people, and eventually the user kind of is more distant, right? And like there's more layers, and then like eventually you forget, and eventually you have a person who knows everything, and so you just go to them when you have questions, right? And that person has had the same answer for the last 10 years of why this will work and why this won't work, and you should never try that, right? And so I think going back to the users and seeing how they've evolved, how they've changed, and making sure it's truly, you know, the right answer. So
somebody who's writing a ton of code should be involved in usability tests is sort of, yeah, the implication.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of, like, you know, small team, like everyone involved. And so whenever you do a concept validation usability test, you should have the tech architect, some of the developers. Again, it's that shared story of getting everyone involved in that product, right? But
great. Well, thanks, Jeremy, for joining us on this Creative Disturbance. We'll have show notes on the website.
Anytime.
Thank you.